March Madness fix.
Puck, baseline, up for the shot, done, off the glass, the game is over.
Gonzaga, the slipper still fits.
It's over. Michigan has won a national championship.
I got a feeling.
Holy mackerel, holy mackerel.
Tonight's gonna be a good night.
The shot.
Yes!
There's the shot by Tate Jordan. Wins it.
Williams could tie it with a three. He does.
Smart takes the shot. Indiana wins the championship. So now Valpo's going to have to go the length of the court. It's to Jenkins, to Drew for the win. Gone. Oh, Drew did it. Valpo has won the game. A miracle.
Wittenberg. Oh, it's a long way.
Puts it up.
Yes! Kamara gets it ahead. Cooper out in front of everybody. Gives it to Katie Douglas. Her shot is up. No good. And the Fighting Irish of Notre Dame have won the national championship.
Virginia, the number one overall seed, is going down. Johnson will inbound. Bounces it into Jerome. The clock's going to run out. The ultimate upset has happened. A 16 has beaten a 1. UMBC knocks off Virginia 74-54. The madness has hit its peak as a 16 defeats a 1 for the first time in NCAA history. UMBC is that 16. 74-54. The Retrievers retrieve the first ever win for a 16 against the 1.
Just part of the craziness. And that's just the first weekend of the NCAA tournament. Who knows what's in store Thursday and Friday when we get to the Sweet 16. Have you ever seen so many 1, 2, 3, and 4 seeds gone before the second weekend? Amazing stuff. Parity is alive and well in college basketball, highlighted by Maryland Baltimore County. Those just sweet Retrievers got it done, taking down the ACC champion, Virginia Cavaliers. Welcome to Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat on this Monday. I'm WSBT Radio Sports Director Darren Pritchett. He is Eric Hansen, and he is the Fighting Irish Football Insider for the South Bend Tribune. Truly, this is a smorgasbord day on the program. I think we have something for everyone on the show tonight. We've got a couple of hours to get all this accomplished. Here's what we have in store. We want to talk about an end of an era. The Colson, Farrell, Gebbin group played their final game on Saturday as the Irish fell to Penn State in the second round of the NIT. And to make matters worse, Bonzi Colson suffered another left foot injury. Eric was there covering the game for the South Bend Tribune. We'll talk to Eric about this. You'll hear from Mike Bray some of his comments in just a moment. Notre Dame women's basketball, they are once again in the Sweet 16. Now, really, were you nervous at halftime when it was 45-45? You knew Villanova wasn't going to go 10 for 15 from three in the second half, like in the first half. And then Willis Reed came on the floor. Catherine Westbelt, despite the ankle injury, didn't play in the first half, roared out of the locker room and helped the Irish roll in the second half as Notre Dame beat Villanova 98-72, and it's another Sweet 16 for Muffa McGraw's Fighting Irish. We're going to talk Notre Dame football later on this hour. We have to get you back in football mode after a few days off. The Irish back on the practice field tomorrow, so we've got some topics lined up to talk to Eric about. The Notre Dame hockey team validated their regular season Big Ten crown by winning the tournament crown in dramatic fashion Saturday night at the Compton Family Ice Arena. Over 5,500 fans. They had a great atmosphere over there for that game, and the Irish pulled it out, and they are the number two overall seed in the NCAA tournament. We'll play back some audio from Irish head coach Jeff Jackson about going back to the tournament and the tournament mindset being one of the number one seeds. Keep in mind, the Irish were a four seed last year and knocked off number one seed Minnesota to get to the regional finals, so you can't feel comfortable as a number one seed. And I have some stats to show. Just because you're the number two overall seed doesn't mean it's a cakewalk to get to the Frozen Four. I'll explain in just a little bit. Next hour, more on the Irish basketball teams. We'll focus more on the NCAA tournament. We got rapid fire, and we'll wrap up the hour with a little high school basketball conversation. But tip of the cap to South Bend Riley, who was undefeated up until Saturday, losing in the Lafayette Jeff semi-state to Carmel, 63-43. Tremendous season, Coach Brand and that Riley basketball team. Their fans had a wonderful season. Following this great basketball team, it just didn't turn out the way they wanted, as they just couldn't put the ball in the basket, unfortunately, shooting below 20% in the game. But congratulations, Riley, on a great season, and Culver Academies will play for a 3A state title Saturday. So we wish them nothing but the best of luck. Now that I've set up the show, hello, Eric, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. Did it feel like just old times covering a basketball game at Notre Dame?
Well, just
like riding a bike?
Yeah, well, it was a lot of fun, and some things have changed. Like we mentioned off the air, now they have like automated scoring. You don't have to keep score yourself. Although I like to keep a kind of a running tab, anyways. But it was. I'll tell you what. I really give the crowd a lot of credit. They were into it, and if Notre Dame won that game, they would have been pretty excited. Unfortunately, they were kind of reduced to booing the refs most of the game, but it was a good crowd on Saturday. I have to say that.
Over at Purcell Pavilion, second round NIT action, it was Notre Dame falling to the Penn State Nittany Lions, 73-63, and the final game of the nucleus of Bonzi Colson, Matt Farrell, and Martinus Gebben. And the big story to come out of the game, Colson left the contest in the second half with another left foot injury, a foot that was surgically repaired back in early January. His final game at Notre Dame, 26 minutes, 16 points, and 9 rebounds. Irish head coach Mike Bray on Bonzi Colson's injury.
He felt some discomfort, Eric. I guess that was in the third quarter. We're going to x-ray it again here at 3 o'clock, and I'm hoping for the best. You know, I mean, he was moving great on it the last couple weeks and great in practice the last 2 days, but he felt some discomfort. So there's not much about the game that's on my mind. It's about his health right now, and so we'll see later today. And I think I'll light a candle on the way home, see if we can dodge a fracture.
All right, so that was Mike Bray after the game on Saturday. I mean, you can't imagine, if you follow Notre Dame football, who asked the injury question. That would be Eric, of course, and you probably heard Mike Bray reference Eric in that particular soundbite. Mike was also asked, had Bonzi had any issues since coming back from foot surgery? Were there any indications something could be wrong? Here's what Mike Bray had to say.
No, none at all. No, he's been really good. You know, starting with the Virginia game, he played 37 minutes, has been very durable. We had two really good intense practices Thursday and Friday. I thought we needed to crank it back up. He was in for all of them. So there's been no, you know, the issues he had early was cramping and conditioning, but he's in shape now. So that's what's disappointing. You know, it's just, again, they say when they put that screw in, that area is much stronger. So I'm hoping for that.
Next hour, we're going to play back some audio. Bonzi Colson speaking after the game. Eric, kind of put a bow on this. It looked like everything was just fine, then all of a sudden, Bonzi started limping.
Yeah, it was toward, they play quarters in the NIT, so I'm not crazy when I say third quarter.
Right.
People probably thought, what's wrong with him? Doesn't he know it's halves in college basketball? Toward the end of the third quarter, he came down funny on his foot, kind of sideways. Went to the locker room for a little while, came back out, had ice on it, was on the bench. One of the coolest things I've seen in sports in a long time was with 35 seconds left. TJ Gibbs fouls out of the game, and Bonzi kicks off the ice, goes to the scores table, checks himself in. Mike Bray, he goes, I'm going in. Mike Bray goes, okay. And he didn't do anything in the last 35 seconds. I mean, he was out on the floor, but it was, you know, we overuse the word culture, and in this instance, it's not overused. It was kind of a, hey, you young guys, remember, you know, this is what we're about. This is what this team has always been about. Chemistry, the brotherhood. And it was really, I got chills when I saw him go back into the game.
It's just almost ridiculously too fitting. That's how the season ends. With
it is.
One of the star players getting injured. And we don't want that to happen. And you know what I'm saying.
Right.
It has been the storyline of this team for the last 3 months. And for them to play their final game and Bonzi to get injured again, it's just ridiculously unfair for the team, the fans, everybody involved with this Irish basketball program. Just, it's ridiculous that this has happened again.
Well, and they will carry some of these injuries into the next season. Yeah. Mike mentioned after the game that that Elijah Burns, they're still deciding if his knee caused him to miss the tail end of the season, if that's going to require surgery. DJ...
Harvey,
he will probably not be able to go on the or be available for the trip to the Bahamas that they're taking before the season, but they expect him to be 100% by the time the season's, you know, they start practicing in October. But boy, that's a long recovery. He's not going to do anything this summer. So, you know, hopefully that they're able to find some health. The same with the women's team. I mean, my goodness, both of these teams had so many injuries this year. And but those are two that kind of jump out at you as you look toward next season.
And the one thing is you lose Farrell and Colson. Those are your two best players.
Correct.
For the Irish women's basketball team, they had four ACLs. Now, a couple of those players, obviously very important, but you still look at their nucleus. They have still the ability to put three elite players out there on the floor every game, and you've got Areke Ogunbowale, Jackie Young, and Jessica Shepherd. Now, I mean,
I'd throw Marina Mabry in that group.
Absolutely.
Too.
Please feel free to do so. Yeah. So you still have an awfully good talent base, even with all those injuries, for the Irish women's basketball team to put on the floor. Now, I know they started the Villanova game yesterday with only six scholarship players available. Then Westbell, who had the ankle injury in the first round, was able to come back in the second half and get out there and help the Irish pull away from Villanova. Again, it was 45-45 at halftime, but the Irish outscored the Wildcats 52-27 in the second half, and they beat Villanova 98-72. And Westbell, in 16 minutes in the second half, 2 points and six rebounds. And an interesting stat I got reading a story about this game. In the NBA, they spend a lot of time talking about point differential with players on the floor, your plus or minus, like hockey. And in that game, Westbell in the second half, when she was on the floor, the Irish were plus 30. Now, is there some coincidence in that? Yes, but I don't think we can take away from her importance to this team as they outscored Villanova 49-19 with Westbell on the floor. Here's a couple of comments from the Irish women's basketball team. First head coach Muffa McGraw just overall on the victory, beating Villanova and advancing to the Sweet 16.
In the second half, obviously defended a lot better than we did in the first half, and certainly having Catherine Westbell available. The trainer told me before the game that that she thought she might be able to play the second half. They were going to keep working on it and see how she looked at halftime. So we were very excited that she was able to get back in game and change the course of the game. I think with her on the floor, we're just a very different team. So Jess was unstoppable inside. Our game plan was to go inside, and she did everything we needed her to do.
Boy, no question, Shepherd, 25 points and 10 rebounds. The fact that she was made eligible after playing at Nebraska last year, I mean, it is unthinkable where they might be without her at this point.
It's changed everything, especially with all the injuries. And that's Brianna Turner, Lily Thompson, Michael Johnson, and who am I leaving out? There's four of them that have ACL injuries. Lily, Brianna Turner, Michael, and the freshman, Michaela Vaughn. Yeah.
Here's Muffin McGraw on having Westbelt available in the second half.
Yeah, I think having Cat on the floor helps us. It's like playing four guards, and that's what we needed to do. We were playing Kelly Cole or Katie Cole in the first half, and I thought that lineup was better to defend them, but it came down to communication. Cat's a great communicator, so we made a lot of mistakes in communication in the first half. They were wide open. We decided not to help and not to rotate when they had dribble penetration so we could just stay out on the three-point line. We didn't think they could make enough twos to beat us, so we're going to just guard the three-point line, let them drive and get layup.
Turned out to be a great decision as Villanova didn't get much done in the second half. They had just 8 points in the third quarter, 27 points in the second half as the Irish rolled to that 26-point victory after being tied at halftime. And here is Catherine Westbelt on the injury.
Well, the sprain definitely wasn't as bad as last year's, thank God. But really right away, right when it happened, I had treatment done two or three times that night, probably 10 times within the next 24 hours, so I think that really helped. But yeah, I just really kept it elevated as much as possible. Was hardly on my feet at all since it happened. And I think that really it was a second half decision whether the coaches felt that I needed to play or not. And, you know, it was a pretty close game in the first half, and I was able to warm up and feel pretty good, so that's when they made the decision that I could play.
Turned out to be a really good decision. She looked good out there. The team rolled in the second half. And death, taxes, and the Irish women's basketball team in the Sweet 16. You just expect it every single year now, and they're back in the Sweet 16. They will go out to Spokane for the regional semifinals, where they will take on the four-seed Texas A&M, a program that beat them in the national championship game during the Skylar Diggins era. But Texas A&M might feel a little fortunate to be in the Sweet 16. They were in trouble, kind of like Nevada was on the men's side a couple of times in the first two rounds.
Yeah, they came from 17 behind in the second half. Kennedy Carter, a really good freshman, made a three-pointer for her 37th point in that game. Inside 5 seconds, they won 80-79 over five-seed DePaul. Another really good player to watch for in the matchup with Notre Dame, Anrielle Howard, 18 points and 19 rebounds. But I still think Notre Dame is the best team in that bracket. Oregon is the two. Yeah. They've advanced. Ohio State has to play tonight, so that would be the fourth team. If it would be chalk if Ohio State wins tonight over Central Michigan. But, yeah, Oregon is the team where Erin Boley transferred to. Now, she is not eligible. She will be on the bench cheering them on, I believe. But they're a very, very good team. But I think Notre Dame is the best team in the Spokane Regional. I think the one thing, Darren, about Catherine Westbelt, when you mentioned that they still have the premier players, the one thing is they've had a really thin margin of error with fouls. You know, those guards cannot get into foul trouble because when one of them come out, you have to put a big player in. You can't play. You don't have another guard, a scholarship guard, to plug in. So it's been amazing that Marina Mabry has been able to learn the point guard position and do so well with it after a little bit of jitters against Louisville the first time. She's really kind of hunkered down and learned that position well.
I'm not going to handicap the possibility of Notre Dame and Oregon playing. I've seen Oregon play twice, and they're very, very good, and they've got that guard, and I know I'm going to butcher her name, Sabrina Ionescu. She is a player that can fill it up and a really, really outstanding player. But Notre Dame's got three outstanding offensive players for sure, and you can probably, again, add Mabry onto that conversation as well. But what Shepherd, Ogunbowale, and Young doing right now gives the Irish a chance every time they get on the floor. So it'll be Notre Dame and Texas A&M Friday in the Sweet 16 in Spokane. So right now we've got two Notre Dame teams in the Sweet 16 of the NCAA tournament, the Irish women's basketball team and the Fighting Irish hockey team, fresh off winning the Big Ten tournament crown on Saturday. What does their road to the Frozen Four look like? We'll talk hockey and Notre Dame football coming up in our next segment. Eric Hansen, Darren Pritchett with you. Hope you had a great weekend. We're talking everything local sports that you want to hear about right now. It is 525 on your home of the Fighting Irish, 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. 5 minutes after the top of the hour. Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat presented by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. Along with Eric Hansen, I'm Darren Pritchett. Thanks for joining us on this Monday evening. More NCAA basketball tournament action live on 96.1 WSBT Thursday and Friday as Westwood One continues to bring you wall-to-wall coverage of the Field of 68 that's now down to the Sweet 16 with some names you were not expected to still be playing on the second weekend. Unbelievable. Teams that are gone: Virginia, Xavier, Cincinnati, North Carolina, Tennessee, Michigan State, Arizona, Wichita State, Auburn. Parity is unbelievable in college basketball. You can have an amazing season like Michigan State and have that cold shooting day, and it is over, and it is brutal. They couldn't throw it in the ocean against Syracuse, one of the top three-point shooting teams in the country.
Some of these finishes have just been incredible. Ooh. The Michigan-Houston game. Michigan had that game, and then they let it get away, and Houston was playing really good defense at the end, rebounding, getting to the free throw line, but with it was under 5 seconds, Houston gets a rebound. You think, okay, they're up two. They're going to make it up four with two free throws. The guy misses both of them. Michigan calls timeout. A guy heaves about a 30-footer at the buzzer, and he looked like he was off balance when he threw it up there. It was just amazing. Feel bad for Houston. They outplayed Michigan at the end.
I don't feel bad for Houston because Kelvin Sampson's the head coach and cheaters. You know what? The basketball gods find them.
I thought you were going to say something about the man bun.
I guarantee you all Indiana fans are happy they lost too.
I don't have love for Kelvin Sampson, but I don't want to put it on the players. But
and the basketball gods got even with Bruce Pearl and Auburn too yesterday.
You are on a roll. Who else do you want to get kicked
out of? Alford got knocked out in the first four.
Okay.
Basketball gods know. The ball knows sometimes. All right, we're going to talk some football in this segment. Next segment, we will transition to Notre Dame hockey, who got a number two overall seed in the NCAA tournament. Let's see what they do with it. But Fighting Irish football spring practice resumes tomorrow. And this will be practice number three for Brian Kelly's team. So let's just talk about a couple of topics as we get you revved up for football conversation. Once again, the Irish captains were announced a little over, a week ago now. And maybe a surprise for a lot of people, punter Tyler Newsome was named a captain. Now, you're not surprised a guy like Drew Tranquil was named captain. He's been a captain before, and he is a great leader on this football team. But a punter, he's one of those guys that's like on the far field, just kind of kicking the ball around every once in a while. Yeah, he's going to be a captain, and Brian Kelly recently talked about Tyler being named captain.
For the last 2 years, he has carried the message for our football program on a day-to-day basis relative to traits over talent. He's been a SWAT leader and maybe one of our best in terms of holding players accountable, and it starts with him. He's been, you know, anytime there's been, you know, a SWAT run where a team hasn't done the things the right way during the week or has been low total points, he's been there every morning. You got to understand, he had over 51% of the votes, and you know, where Sam and Drew benefit from a unit that they're with. You know, he's got four guys that he's with on a day-to-day basis on another field. And to get that kind of vote as a punter sends a strong message about how he's looked at by his peers. You know, because he's the punter, right? You know, he doesn't hang around with us. You know, he's not with us in unit. But yet, to garner that kind of support says a lot about how he's perceived.
So that's Brian Kelly talking about Tyler Newsome being one of three captains, along with Tranquil and center, Sam Mustipher. So can you explain to Irish fans, besides what you just heard from Brian Kelly right there, why Tyler Newsome is an important part of this leadership group? Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, it does. I remember the day that I spent with Brian last June that I wrote about, the day in the life of Brian Kelly. he referenced the SWAT teams, their accountability teams, and everything goes into this, academics, being on time, weightlifting, all this stuff. And Tyler Newsom's team beat everybody's. Pretty much everybody else that was a SWAT team leader was a captain last year. He was the one that wasn't. And his guys were absolutely stellar. So at the end of spring practice, Brian gave Tyler all the guys that were not stellar records, the guys that had reputations for being a little bit difficult in terms of buy-in and so forth. And that's who Tyler led all summer and into the fall. And I think that you give him credit for doing that and taking that and showing leadership there. And then you think about what he did in terms of his own life, the perspective he brings after being in a really difficult auto accident. Mike Varell wrote a great story about this, being in an auto accident, being in the hospital, being told you probably are not going to play football again. and just his perspective of not taking anything for granted is a really cool story.
Eric Hansen, Darren Pritchett with you, talking Fighting Irish football on SportsBeat, brought to you by Budweiser. Brian Kelly gave up a lot of responsibilities before last year because he wanted to be a head football coach that had his hands in everything that's a part of this football program. So now, a year into the process, is he still going to be that guy in practice that is moving all over the place, not necessarily just working with the offense or working with the quarterbacks? Is he going to be roaming from sideline to sideline, working on all aspects of fundamentals with this football team? And here's what BK had to say.
No, I think I probably want to move around a little bit more, Eric. I want to see Coach Quinn with the offensive line. I think it's important that I'm able to evaluate Terry, and not that I'm looking over his work, because I have great trust in his experience, but I want to see him and see his interactions. You know, as Pete mentioned, I want to see the entire dynamics of the defensive group, and we're a little shorthanded on offense, so I want to make sure that I stay over there and make sure that we're not, trying to win the drill with not enough guys. You know, let's get some of these walk-ons in there. If they get some time in there, that's fine too. So I think, you know, that and special teams are making some changes, special teams scheme-wise, that I'd like to be involved in as well. So I think from that perspective, I'll probably be floating around a little bit more.
All right. So Brian Kelly, you'll have to look for that visor to find where he is on the practice field. First off, since we're on the radio, people have no idea what was going on during that soundbite. We actually were like a NASCAR pit crew because maybe you could tell during Eric's last comments, it got a little noisy with the microphone. His microphone broke, so he held it, and we actually took a microphone off another stand and then attached it to his, just like changing a tire in NASCAR. I think we were at 15.2 seconds, so we're still on the lead lap. I'm telling you, we should get the engineer salary for just a couple of minutes.
There
right?
you go.
That's a pretty good salary for 30 seconds work. All right. You heard Brian Kelly talk about he's still going to be everywhere. He wants to be a part of the schematic changes on special teams. So it's going to be very similar to last year, which sure seems to be of benefit to this entire football team.
I think it is. I think where I would wonder about it a little bit is regards to the quarterbacks, because
that's fair.
I think Brian at least he has the reputation outside of Notre Dame. I mean, this isn't me talking. These are other coaches talking. They feel like Brian is a really good quarterbacks coach.
And we've seen him with the quarterbacks for years during practice.
And so, you know, when you have a position that needs some TLC or whatever the opposite of TLC is, it needs improvement. You wonder why you would take that away, but the overseer role for Brian worked so well last year. It shows the confidence he has in Chip Long and Tom Reese to handle the job, and it's going to be interesting to see how that evolves.
Eric Hansen, Darren Pritchett talking Fighting Irish football on 96.1 WSBT. The sports leader, spring practice resumes tomorrow, practice number 3 over at the University of Notre Dame. And also something Brian talked about recently was trying to learn from the road experience at Miami. Going into that Miami game in November last year, the Irish were still in the running for a playoff spot. Eric, if I'm not mistaken, I believe they were number 3 in the college football playoff rankings that were unveiled right before that Miami game. Not a whole lot went right in that game for the Fighting Irish. It was an unbelievable atmosphere down in Miami. Brian Kelly has talked about all the distractions involved in that particular football game. And Brian has talked about learning from that Miami game, maybe some things that will help them this year when they go on the road a lot in the month of November.
Yeah, you know, it was a perfect storm. And I'm not going to spend too much time on one particular game as much as what we're trying to create with our football team is really a mental toughness that allows you to play through that. Look, you know, and I said this to the team, and I'll say it here right now. You know, we have to play better in November, and we're aware of that. So as we build our habits on a day-to-day basis, we're building it towards certainly beating Michigan in our opener, protecting our home field, and playing better in November. If we hit those three mileposts, we'll be in pretty good shape this next season.
So that's BK talking about that road experience. He mentioned Michigan toward the end, and it's worth noting that the Ole Miss transfer, quarterback Shea Patterson, I read recently from one of the national writers that covers college football, chances are very high there will not be a decision made by the NCAA about Patterson's eligibility this year during Michigan spring practice. And we've talked about this many times. We've had Notre Dame players, even last summer, go through this, not knowing their status. Aloy Gilman was a long, drawn-out process.
It went into the season.
Ridiculous. I mean, just absolutely ridiculous. So here we are again with the NCAA, who can't seem to get anything right nowadays in terms of decisions about breaking rules and absolutely doing nothing through the years, and it takes the FBI to unveil all these dark secrets in college basketball. So here we are again, the NCAA dragging their feet for whatever reason and not getting these decisions done. We've been through it at Notre Dame, so we have to say the same thing about opponents. It's really unfortunate that Michigan may not know the answer for some time if this guy's going to be eligible after transferring from Ole Miss after their coach was fired.
And where that comes into play, Darren, is, I mean, certainly before the season, he'll know. But if you're in Jim Harbaugh, how do you give reps to Shea Patterson? How much, you know, do you give him number two reps? Brian Kelly was in that position in training camp with Alohi Gilman, where he basically gave him number two reps because he didn't know which way it was going to go. And, you know, had he been given him number one reps, then Nick Coleman and Jalen Elliott wouldn't have gotten the reps they needed to be ready when Alohi was ruled ineligible by NCAA. Yeah. And then just the opposite. You know, Muffet McGraw with Jessica Shepherd, she was kind of convinced that it wasn't going to happen for them. So Jessica was playing with the second team in practice. And then I think on the day of their exhibition game, they found out.
Mm-hmm.
And they had to rework their offense because she's a different type of player than what Coco Nelson and Michaela Vaughn are as far as, you know, post players. And then they lose Michaela Vaughn. But it was really, you wonder why that can't be expedited quicker, why that is something that seems so back burner.
A lot of people would love to know the answer to that particular question. So Michigan still not sure if Patterson will be eligible. And boy, does that change the complexion of the Notre Dame-Michigan game if he is eligible. This was arguably the premier quarterback coming out of high school a couple of years ago. And Michigan, Eric, you've documented over and over since the season ended that Brandon Wimbush or whomever at quarterback is going to have their hands full in that first game with the Michigan defense. And if you add on a quote-unquote five-star type quarterback, that first game gets a little more interesting.
It does. He's, you know, he doesn't show, or he didn't last year show, dual threat type of things. But what he did show was a really good passing efficiency rating. He would have been a top 20 quarterback if he had played in all 13 or 12 games for Ole Miss last year. But he was injured, so he didn't have a full season. But his pass efficiency rating was good enough to be in the top 20, which is impressive given the defenses that he faces.
So spring practice resumes tomorrow at the University of Notre Dame. Brian Kelly, after practice, will meet the media, some of the players as well. So here we go again. Spring practice getting rolling at the University of Notre Dame with practice number 3 tomorrow. Eric and Darren with you. Sports Beat brought to you by Budweiser. Coming up next, a football-related My 5 question of the day, and then we shift gears to the Notre Dame hockey team. They're getting set for the NCAA tournament. Some details on that on the way. Sports Beat from 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.
Evans, left side, Morrison walks in, shoots, he scores! Cam Morrison wins it in overtime at 9:23, and it's a Big Ten tournament championship overtime game winner, Cam Morrison, the sophomore from Aurora, Ontario, and Notre Dame, Big Ten tournament champions. They beat Ohio State 3-2.
The video review is over, and the Fighting Irish, in their first season in the Big Ten Conference, have won the regular season and tournament championship crown. Jake Evans hugs head coach Jeff Jackson on the ice. Throw your gloves in six. That's a championship winner for the Fighting Irish. Cam Morrison, the sophomore, scores his 8th of the year. He ripped it from the left circle. He beat Romeo. Glove side.
With a little Hockey Night in Canada theme in the background, Juliet not happy with Ohio State's goaltender after that goal given up by Romeo. But the Irish got it done, a 3-2 overtime win over Ohio State. And how about that for a first season in the Big Ten? Two banners, two trophies, and a pair of rings. And now, hey, we had the same conversation last year. This program has done everything it can under Jeff Jackson except one thing, and that is to win their final game of the year. That's the missing piece for this program, winning a national championship. It is not easy. You got to win 4 games against the elite competition, 16-team field, but they have put themselves in position to get it done. And Eric, I'll say this, last year was a little unexpected going to the Frozen Four, even though we've said many times, if you get in the field, anybody can win it. The number 16 seed a few years ago, Yale, got in because Notre Dame beat Michigan in the final CCHA tournament championship game. Yale went on to win the national championship, and I still have not got my ring from Yale because if we don't win, they don't get in, and they don't win the national championship. So anybody can win it. Notre Dame was the 4 seed last year, got to the Frozen Four, and now they are the number 2 overall seed in the NCAA tournament. They're the top seed in the East Regional. We'll play in Bridgeport, Connecticut, Friday at 3 o'clock. You can hear the game on our sister station, Z94.3 FM. So in the East Regional, the 1 seed is Notre Dame, the 2 seed Providence, the 3 is Clarkson, and the 4 seed is Michigan Tech. And the Irish will try to get to the Frozen Four for the 4th time in the last 11 years. And for you longtime Notre Dame hockey fans, did you ever think we'd be having this conversation? If you think back to the 80s or the 90s, it's a whole different era now as Notre Dame has put itself year in and year out in position to be a champion, and maybe this is the year they get it done. We'll have to see.
Okay. Do you feel like the Big Ten has prepped Notre Dame for the tournament better than the Hockey East would have?
That's a great question for Jeff Jackson, who I'm trying to line up for tomorrow's program.
Okay.
Because I'll just say this, the Big Ten is a very deep league this year. We were going to get 5 teams in out of the 7, but due to 3 upsets in conference tournaments, Minnesota was the last team out. In fact, had we lost to Ohio State, Minnesota would have got in. So Minnesota head coach Don Lucia, a Notre Dame grad, was rooting against his alma mater to get into the NCAA tournament. Eric, Ohio State is as good as anybody in the country. We went 4-1 against them. Don't let that fool you. The Buckeyes can win the whole thing. I really believe that. Michigan, since they've settled down their goaltending, they could run the table and win the whole thing. Penn State is really good offensively. I'm not sure defensively they have enough to get it done. But if you get some goaltending at the right time, maybe they can achieve that ultimate goal. But Notre Dame is an older team, Eric, and when Notre Dame is older, they normally have a better chance to win, and that's why I believe they have a chance to do some good things. They have four defensemen along the blue line in their lineup that have played over 100 career collegiate games, and that experience is huge, especially when you've got a goaltender in Cale Morris right behind those guys to take care of any business not taken care of by that particular group.
Well, I do love the hockey committee's sense of geography that the Midwest Regional is in Allentown, Pennsylvania.
It comes down to bidding, and oh, okay. Nobody in the Midwest bid on it.
Really?
That's just what it comes down to. It's not a moneymaker. It is a horrible system. We'd get very small crowds for the NCAA tournament, which is extremely disappointing. The biggest games of the year are not well attended. They're overpriced, the tickets, and a lot of fans just aren't going to travel. I mean, our fans would have to go to Bridgeport, Connecticut to watch the Irish play in the NCAA tournament.
Can you... I saw the host teams, and none of them actually are hosting on their campus. For example, North Dakota is the host team for the South Dakota Regional, which is west. But can you host a regional? Could Notre Dame?
Yes.
Okay,
remember,
and they can play in their own regional.
Remember a few years ago, We had the regional here, and that was the one year
sure.
We didn't make the tournament.
Yeah,
you are guaranteed to play in your regional if you make the tournament. Penn State is hosting the Allentown, Pennsylvania Regional, so that's why they automatically go to that regional. They try to help attendance by putting teams close to home.
Right. Wow. Okay.
There's your explanation. But there's just nothing in the Midwest for Notre Dame and Ohio State. That's the unfortunate thing of all years. I mean, Ohio State would love to have a regional in Cincinnati like the last 2 years. They'd be close to home and they'd get a huge crowd. But again, they're going to Pennsylvania. Maybe they still get a good crowd. We'll see. But
Allentown is pretty far east of Pennsylvania. That's the one thing.
Well, I'm just saying,
it was Pittsburgh.
They could drive if they wanted to.
Yeah.
This is the first time your alma mater's been a number one seed in the regional. So good team.
They
really
were a club sport when I was in college. So.
How about that? Well, They're really, really good. All right, we'll take a quick timeout. My five question of the day next on WSBT.
One question, five answers. This is the My Five Question of the Day on Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT.
Notre Dame spring practice resumes tomorrow. So what five Notre Dame football players need to impress this spring, or they could be running out of chances to get on the field? We start with answer number five.
I'm going to go with defensive lineman Micah Dew-Treadway. He'll be a senior this year. He's had some injury problems, kind of an intriguing athlete, but he's got passed by. You know, right now, Jerry Tillery and Jonathan Bonner are their starters inside. Myron Tongavaloa, Mosa, and Kurt Heinisch have kind of hopped past him, so he's got to get hopping.
Number four.
Junior linebacker Jonathan Jones. He's going to get every opportunity to show that he's the rotation middle linebacker, that he's the guy like Tavon Coney that's going to play with the other two linebackers and rotate in. But there's some freshmen crawling up from behind him.
The five Notre Dame football players that need to impress this spring, or they could be running out of chances to get on the field. Number three.
Nick Watkins at cornerback.
Wow.
Had a great spring last year and really a great August. And then Troy Pride jumped him on the depth chart. I still think he's a valuable player, but he could nose back into a starting spot if he has a great spring.
Last year at this time, who would have thought he'd be on this list this year? Number two.
Michigan transfer Freddie Canteen. He was an opening day starter last year, then got hurt, and he's going to have to stay healthy and beat out some young bucks.
And more than anybody else, who needs to have that big spring?
He's got Cole Kmet in his rearview mirror. It's Alizé Mack, and he really has run out of chances. If he is not on top of his game this spring, they're going to move on with Brock Wright and Cole Kmet.
Here's Eric Hansen with what's coming up in tomorrow's South Bend Tribune sports section.
Well, we will have all the latest on both the men's and women's basketball teams and the latest on the NCAA tournament, including Loyola Chicago, and of course, much, much more.
Very good. All in the South Bend Tribune, IndyInsider.com. Eric will be over at Notre Dame tomorrow, chatting with Fighting Irish head coach Brian Kelly. Thank you, sir, and we will talk to you tomorrow.
Thank you.
Sean Stiers joins me in just a moment. We've got NCAA tournament to talk about, Notre Dame basketball, maybe some Fighting Irish hockey mixed in high school basketball. We'll try to get it done in that hour. Top of the hour, WSBT South Bend. Six minutes after the top of the hour, Sports Beat presented by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. Darren Pritchett, Sean Stiers with you this hour. Still to come, more of the Irish basketball team falling to Penn State in the NIT and the injury to Bonzi Colson. You will hear from Colson coming up. Also, more on a wacky NCAA men's basketball tournament. Rapid fire, and we'll try to sneak in a little high school basketball conversation at the end of this hour, so we better not dilly-dilly, whatever that means, in those commercials for Bud Light.
Dilly-dilly.
I assume that's a good thing. We're not saying anything bad, I assume. That's not code for something
right.
That's inappropriate.
Right.
Dilly-dilly, just kind of like carry on, right? I guess?
It is.
This is great. Carry on. Let's do it.
I tell you, I think we're all used to dilly-dilly at this point. They've got some new commercials for the tournament, but I tell you what, by day four of the weekend, I mean, you have seen every commercial there is like 20 times. It's like, all right, I'm over that commercial already. I don't need to hear that jingle again.
Well, two things. Number one, I don't think dilly-dilly means the same thing that Elaine on Seinfeld talked about, yada, yada. I think we're talking about different things.
It could be ballpark. Yeah, I mean, you know.
I don't think so. Yada, yada.
Yeah.
And the second thing is, I know everybody makes fun of True TV. No one ever watches True TV unless the tournament's on and you get all these promos for the shows that you've really never heard of.
Right.
Let me say this. I was turned on a few months ago to a show on True TV that is really, really funny. If you just want to laugh, it's called Impractical Jokers.
Okay.
Have you ever watched this?
I have not. I think I've heard of it, though.
It's on demand if you have Comcast. I'm sure it's on other systems. But it's just four friends, and they basically go around and, for example, they had a bit the other day, or this was actually last season, where they're in a mall in like a food court, and one of the guys had to go to a person and say, hey, we're giving away a $100 gift card every 15 minutes. You want to sign up?
Uh-huh.
So they get the phone number and they give it to the other three guys and they start texting to that person and makes that person look bad. And the goal is to get as many replies as possible.
Right.
And the loser at the end of the show who doesn't do as well has to get punishment. And I know it sounds kind of generic, but they are really funny, and they get into some really awkward situations.
I have to check it out. It's interesting that you say that, though, because I remember last year, first day of the tournament, I tweeted at True TV, just kind of joking around, saying,
uh-oh,
does anyone watch True TV, you know, at True TV, whatever it is, from April through February? And they tweeted back at me, why, yes, in fact, we do. You know, they do. There's all these different shows. And I said, okay, well, I watch a lot of different TV. Give me three shows I should be watching. And they never responded to that.
What in the hell are you doing?
I felt like they missed a golden opportunity to turn someone onto True TV that, because as you said, I don't watch anything on True TV. I'll try Impractical Jokers. Is that what it's called? Okay.
They did a bit where...
give it a shot, but I felt like they missed a big opportunity.
They did a bit where they had to steal an item out of a grocery cart and then throw it across the aisle. They had to catch it, and you had to see how many things you could hold while you made the catch, and whoever had the most items won.
Oh, nice.
So they're
okay.
Stealing things out of grocery carts. I know it sounds kind of generic, but they all have really unique laughs, and it's just very, very funny for
all
whatever
right.
reason. My kids and I get a good chuckle out
now,
of
is it a regular cast, or is it kind of new people every week?
Same four guys. They're just friends. And they just go around and have these bits, and it's pretty funny.
Okay.
It's pretty funny. So give it a shot and let me know.
All right.
Let's get to some Irish basketball conversation. I'm calling it an end of an era.
Yeah,
you had this senior class that was a part of two Elite Eights, an ACC championship, a Maui Invitational victory. Now, of course, Jaron Grant and Pat Connaughton had a lot to do with getting this rolling. And this group, when they were younger, were a part of the building of this program. And then as the years, of course, went on, they were a bigger and bigger part of the program. And this season was supposed to be a special year. The injuries robbed this group and the entire team and the fan base of having what could have been one heck of a year. And you look at the way this tournament has unfolded. I mean, let's just pretend for a second. If Notre Dame is in Kentucky shoes right now, you're thinking Final Four.
Yeah.
You got Loyola. You got Nevada. And you got Kansas State. Mm-hmm. Kentucky, the 5 seed, is the top seed left in that bracket. And you just imagine what the feeling could be right now, thinking, wow, we might go to the Final Four for the first time since 1979. But, of course, the Irish and the injuries robbed of that opportunity to get into the NCAA tournament. How about Syracuse winning 3 games in 5 days to go to the Sweet 16?
Figures, right?
It doesn't validate that they should have been in, but they have taken advantage of the opportunity.
That's exactly
Give
it.
Them credit.
That's exactly it. We might have to go longer in this segment talking about that now, because that was going to be a rapid fire.
I'll shut up.
Oh, well, okay, you want to address it then?
Yeah.
We'll get more into it then.
Michigan State just had an awful shooting day at the wrong time, and they still almost escaped. But I'm stunned Michigan State is out. I really am.
I think a lot of people are. And I saw some of the bracket contests. Oh, there's two. There's an internal one, and then there's the one we're doing with our listeners.
I'm not even looking.
No, I know. But you'd be amazed like how many people have Michigan State winning it all. If you've got anybody.
Ding.
Yeah. I mean, ding. And that's Michigan State. If you have Purdue, you're in good shape right now. Basically, if you had anyone on the left side of the bracket, you might as well, for anyone that was considered like a 1 seed, a 2 seed from the left side, you obviously can forget about that because they're all gone over there. It is amazing. Just the I've never seen a bracket be decimated like this. We always, usually because we come in after the first, my brackets. This is, I've never seen anything like this before.
I've never lost my championship game the first weekend. And it's funny because after the first round, I tweeted out, I really need to watch more college basketball and stop watching so much hockey, because then I get into these brackets and I just am not knowledgeable enough about enough teams. I watch Notre Dame, I watch the Big Ten, I watch the Missouri Valley. Outside of that, I don't watch a whole lot. I remember, I think, writing that after the Thursday session, I didn't realize how good Cincinnati was, and that's me not watching enough basketball. And then what happens? We're up 22 against Nevada. I guess that was Friday. They actually won their first round game. They blow the 22-point lead to Nevada, and they're gone. I was so impressed with them in the first round. But then I'm thinking yesterday, watching all this stuff happen, even if I would have watched basketball wall-to-wall the last 3 months, how does that help you in this situation? Who would have thought Texas A&M drills North Carolina? Who would have saw that coming? They were 0-6, weren't they, in the SEC at one point?
I think so. Yeah, they had a really bad start. I saw them play Kansas this year. I wasn't impressed by any stretch at all. They were just a decent, what I would call middle-of-the-pack ACC team, probably. Was not impressed at all, but they just, as you said, I mean, they just thumped North Carolina. And North Carolina was a team that was not impressive early in the season, but got better as the season went on, as those guys played together.
So my second thought is, why do I even want to watch more college basketball? Because it's not going to matter. These tournaments are now just absolutely insane. It's not going to change. I mean, we finally had the 16 over the 1. They're now 1 and 135, 16 seeds, but a 16 has never beaten a 9. We do now know that.
That's right.
But it was a remarkable ball game. Virginia lost that game during the week, I would have to imagine, either out of lack of focus, maybe the injury to their sixth man threw them off, whatever the case may be, they looked like a team that had seen a ghost. Well, they looked just lethargic, unenthused. I think they were in shock. I mean, the Retrievers, those guards hit some huge shots in the second half. They just kept building the lead, and Virginia, known for their defense, gives up their most points in a game this year to the Retrievers of Maryland, Baltimore County.
Yeah, they did so many good things, and Ryan Odom had such a good plan. Huh. Pester the Virginia guards around half court, not let them be able to look up and find their guys on the wings. And then that pack line defense, they weren't going to let that be the deciding factor. They were going to force some tempo and get up there and not let them set up and have to drive in. And when you shoot 12 out of 24 from 3-point range and you're a small team like that, I mean, that goes a long way. And I mean, really, that's between just the harassment that they did shooting the threes, and then they were just 6 of 22 against Kansas State last night. I mean, there's your game. There's your difference right there.
Kansas State, bad.
No, I know.
Bad.
I know.
Bad.
Because Kansas State couldn't hit shots either. It's just that UMBC, I mean, they left everything out there against Virginia.
I think I read that the Retrievers had 18 possessions with a chance to tie or take the lead in the second half and failed to do so. Just couldn't hit the big shot like they did against Virginia. You know, it's funny. When I fill out these brackets, I've always done this. I always take a lot of chances. I think it's fun. This is a year I took a lot of chances but didn't get any right other than Loyola. I love Loyola coming into the tournament. I truly did. Watched them several times. They have a championship feel. They have a lot of players who played for state championships and won state championships in the state of Illinois. And I just felt really comfortable because they're really good defensively. And I thought they got a pretty good draw. And they took care of business, and they're in the Sweet 16. Other than that, I have nothing to brag about. I mean, that's my calling card. And I hope people listened to me talk about them last week and took advantage. Otherwise, I hope you didn't listen, because I had the Spartans winning it all. And I was in shock. I was with my son at a basketball tournament, and we were actually playing a team from Oakland, Michigan, and they all had their phones out watching the Michigan State game, and they were up 5. Man, they're going to win. And then I just saw the long faces and the grimacing. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. They're not going to lose to Syracuse. And sure enough, incredible.
Yeah, and incredible. I tell you, the only thing that I can hang my hat on, I do have the right side of the bracket fairly intact.
Good for you.
But I legitimately thought that Kansas could easily be an early out. But because we're sitting here in northern Indiana, I picked them to win it all just for strategy. One, because I want them to, but two, for strategy, because I figured there were going to be, as we've already seen, a lot of people picking either Duke, Michigan State, or Purdue, and a lot of the brackets I've seen around here, that's what it is. So we'll see if it holds. But, I mean, that Seton Hall kid, I don't know if you watched any of that game when they played Kansas the other night. It was like 23 points and 24 rebounds or the other way. Just a monster double-double, because, as we talked about last week, Kansas cannot play defense. That was just a shoot game. It was a fun game to watch if you like offense, but based on all the other upsets that I've seen, it was not a comfortable game to watch as a fan of that team.
I am prepared for Duke and Villanova in the Final Four.
I could very well see it.
It's coming.
They got to get past that zone, though, don't they?
They handle them at Cameron.
Yeah.
They're an offensive juggernaut. They don't play a lot of defense. Syracuse can't score. They just bore the game down, and credit to Jim Boeheim. He's got 3 wins in 5 days, and he's laughing all the way to the Carrier Dome after that trip. He's back in the Sweet 16 with this group.
Yep, that's right.
Team number 68.
So much for what any of us thought.
Unbelievable. Well, speaking of the Boilermakers.
Klein out top. The three by Mathias, and it's good! Dakota Mathias, one of the great shooters in the country, comes up with the biggest shot of the day for Purdue.
Just proud of our guys. You know, we found a way. We lost big fella, and, you know, he's a big part of our team, but I think we also show we got a lot of pieces, and we got a lot of guys, and we're able to hang in there and get this one. Last year we were focused, and we just ran into a buzzsaw. Kansas was really good in that game in the second half, so we know we're playing a quality opponent again. We know they're tough and physical, but anytime you can have an experience like that, I think it definitely helps you the next time.
I notice a lot of Boilermaker fans or media members saying, what is it with Purdue? They always seem to get a bad break. They're jinxed. Isaac Haas, their 7-footer, crashes to the floor late in the first round game, injures the right elbow. It's fractured. tried to go. Apparently, they thought they had a brace he might be able to play with. That was denied. So the Boilermaker engineers are now working on something.
That's right.
In West Lafayette right now to try to find a brace that will fit the code and get Isaac Haas on the floor. But he tried to shoot a free throw in the pregame, and he couldn't even pull the trigger. I'm not sure what he can do, but I do feel for Boilermaker fans, this appeared to be a team that had the ability to go to the Final Four. I guess they still could do so. They still have a really good basketball team. They dug in and got by Butler yesterday. I mean, Villanova's there down the line. They got to get by Texas Tech first. But at the same time, it's still an awfully good team, but Haas can be a difference maker on the inside. Part of me says, I wonder if it helps them defensively, even though he's a guy around the rim that maybe can block a couple of shots. He doesn't rebound as well as you would think for a big guy. But if I'm the opposition with Haas on the floor, I play pick and roll with his guy.
Yeah.
Get him away from the basket. Make him move. So defensively, I almost feel like that they might be, in a strange way, a little more difficult of a matchup without Haas in there. Teams can't take advantage of that as much.
Harms did play pretty well. I mean, he didn't put up a huge scoring game by any means. Yeah, he's a little bit quicker, a little bit better feet. He doesn't quite have the experience and feel that Haas does, but I saw the post-game interview with Harms, and he was talking about how Haas was helping him on the bench and stuff like that. Maybe it does make him a little bit more movement. Haas did a really good job in the games I saw for Purdue this year, just the way he was able to feel the double teams, move the ball inside and out. But it's definitely a loss, but they're still ticking, so that's all that matters at this point.
The law firm of Matthias Edwards & Edwards is still going. Nice to see Tyler Eifert's brother playing for the Boilermakers.
Yeah.
Plays a nice role on that Boilermaker team. They're still pretty solid defensively. They've got offensive weapons. I'm not giving up hope on Purdue yet, even with Haas out. I mean, Villanova, again, look at Michigan State. One of the best three-point shooting teams in the country. Couldn't throw it in Lake Michigan against Syracuse. If that day happens to Villanova and it happens against Purdue, anything is possible. No one is invincible in this tournament.
I agree. Completely agree. I mean, again, all you've got to do is look at the left side of the bracket to find that out. It's just
a 5,
insane.
A 7, a 9, and an 11.
11. Two 11s are left right now.
Right. First time ever since seeding began in 79 that a region had all of the top four seeds eliminated the first weekend. This is the first time ever for that. First time a 16 over a 1. Who knows who's going to win the national championship? I would not be shocked if Loyola gets to the Final Four. Now, they got to get by Nevada and Kentucky, but I'm telling you, they play well together, and if you watch them play, they move the ball and share the ball like Notre Dame.
Mm-hmm.
The ball flows. Now, they don't have the offensive weapons that Notre Dame has. Loyola is better defensively.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm telling you, the way they share the ball, they can get by anybody. Now, it looks like they might have got a break on a call against Tennessee down the stretch, but they took advantage. And if you're a Ramblin' man, you got to love Loyola right now because they've got a shot to do something in that region, even though Kentucky's there. And I know Kentucky is Kentucky, but in this tournament, how can you give up on Sister Jean and Loyola right now?
Well, I tell you what, I mean, Kentucky's got the talent. Just what, probably less than a month ago, they were sitting on the bubble. They weren't even sure if they were going to get in for sure, and they ended up making it. So, I mean, they've got more talent, but when you're talking about the team play and the whole thing, the Nevada matchup with Loyola Chicago, I mean, that could be the tougher matchup because of the way they play as well.
Nevada should have lost both games. They were done against two teams.
They just won't go away.
No. And Coach Cronin in Cincinnati is still whining about some of the questions in his post-game. Although he was asked, are you going to be able to sleep tonight? If that was a radio guy that asked that question, I'm really embarrassed for all of us. I'm hoping it was a TV or an internet guy, selfishly, that asked that particular question, because that gives us all a bad name. Why would you ask that?
Man.
Why would you ask that? Give me a break. All right, let's take a break and let's do this. We want to hear from Bonzi Colson. You got that audio after the Penn State loss on Saturday. What happened with the foot? And then we'll get to rapid fire. Still more to get to. And we've got more NCAA tournament action Thursday and Friday. All the games right here on 96.1 WSBT. Sean is here. I'm Darren. 6:30 is our time. Sports be brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. Notre Dame basketball, their season came to a close Saturday at Purcell Pavilion, losing in the second round of the National Invitational Tournament. The Big Ten's Penn State Nittany Lions took down the Irish 73-63. The starting lineup with Colson, Farrell, and Gebben playing their final game in a Fighting Irish uniform. And the big story to come out of the ball game, Colson left the game in the second half with a left foot injury, the same foot that needed surgery in early January, causing him to miss 15 games. His final game with the Irish, 26 minutes, 16 points, and 9 rebounds. I think you were at the game on Saturday, so right. Any perspective on Colson going down with that injury?
Well, I mean, there really wasn't anything obvious when he was out there playing, but then the next thing you know, it's the fourth quarter, and I look over from where I was sitting, looking straight across the floor to the Notre Dame bench, and he's sitting right next to Mike Bray, and Mike is looking at him, and they're having a conversation, and they keep talking, and then it kind of wraps up, but they talk for a minute or two. I mean, it seemed like an eternity almost. And then kind of go back and watching the game and then look back over there and Bonzi's not on the bench anymore and Skip Meyer, the trainer, isn't there either. They go off to the locker room. A few minutes later, Bonzi comes back and he's got an ice pack on his left foot. And I mean, as soon as he left, you knew something was going on, especially when the trainer goes with him. And so then he comes back and had the ice pack on for a while and then finally put the shoe on and it was just it was obvious and unfortunately the game kind of, I think that was a big deflator. They had a little spurt after he left the floor, but just not enough to get back in it.
Unreal.
And that was it.
Boy, if Skip gets paid like lawyers do,
oh man.
If he charges by the hour, he can retire after this year.
Making his money this year for sure.
He was busy nonstop over the last 3 months of this basketball season. Well, you went into the Irish locker room after the game, and here were some of the comments of Bonzi Colson after suffering that left foot injury.
I felt my foot kind of went inward a little bit, and I actually felt a little like worse than what I did in practice when I heard it the first time. So I just got to get another x-ray, get an x-ray soon, so figure out what it is, the deal with it, and just go from there.
Coach mentioned you put yourself back in the last 35 seconds. Can you talk about
I just wanted to be out there. Those places means a lot to me. I wanted to I just wanted to be out there, you know, the court, be on the court, just embrace it with my brothers. You know, we've had an unbelievable season. We've had an unbelievable career as a senior. So, you know, just be out there and soak in the last, you know, moments I have out there playing in this arena. And that's what I wanted to do. And it felt good being out there and, you know, for the last 20 seconds. I tried to get a rebound, but the ball didn't bounce my way, so that kind of hurts. But I would, if I got the ball, I probably would have shot it no matter where I was. But and I would have landed on my right foot, not my left. But I just wanted to be out there, you know. I didn't really want to be on the bench for that last 30 seconds.
I'm sorry, Bounce, but at any point since you came back, did you feel any discomfort?
No discomfort in it. I always felt good. And so it's just gonna have to see. You know, like I was just sore, this basketball soreness in my knees. And that just happens.
Did you land on it funny, or you
were just in the process? Yeah, I kind of landed on it funny and landed on my kind of sideways on my foot. So just have to see. Get an x-ray a little bit and see what the deal is.
Bonzi, at Media Day, we talked about leadership. With the adversity this year, what have you learned about
it? Yeah, I just learned that you know, leadership is a role that, first of all, I love being a leader. And, you know, Matt and I and Marty and all the seniors know we're going to have to be leaders. And we learned from the guys before us, Sharon Grant, Pat, Connaughton, Zach, Steve, VJ, all those guys taught us how to, Demetrius taught us how to be leaders. And, you know, you got to know how to talk. You got to know when to talk to your brothers. You got to know how to talk to your brothers. And then, you know, when the lights are bright, you need a bucket and you need to step up. You got to be that person to step up. And you got to embrace the role. It's a role that is given to a Notre Dame man who is high in character, who knows how to handle themselves, who is, who just loves to play the game. And I think that's important.
There's a USC player who decided he's not going to play in the NIT and all that. I'm sure you heard. Did you give any consideration at all?
No.
It was obvious it was NIT.
No, I wanted to play. I missed so much of the season. I wanted to play. I wanted to cut down nets in MSG. That was never in my mind. Play, just enjoy the game. You know, you can't take this game for granted. You know, God's blessed you with talents, and I just want to go out there and just play my game. And I just play with passion, energy, so that was never a thought for me.
Very fair question to ask. And going back to Jalen Smith, the Irish linebacker, his injury in the Fiesta Bowl, a non-playoff football game. I remember after that game saying, if you're a first-round pick, I don't blame you for skipping a non-playoff game. If you have a chance to hurt your future, it is a business in the National Football League, I'm not going to blame anyone. I remember Christian McCaffrey, the Stanford running back, sat out, I think it was the Sun Bowl, and I had no problem with that. I think the USC kid took a lot of grief. I guess in principle, yeah, I understand why people are saying, why would you be selfish and not be with your teammates? I totally get that stance. But at the same time, the NIT is like the Independence Bowl.
It's the NIT.
And I can't blame the USC kid for protecting his future.
Right.
And
Bonzi had
case,
more to protect because he had a previous injury.
And I have no problem with Bonzi playing. Had he said no, I would have had no problem with that either. Because you just got to put this game in perspective. And I know he loves playing with his teammates, and he wanted to play again. Mm-hmm. Like I said, I would agree with every direction he would have went. I understand both sides of the story, but you just hate to see this happen in this type of game. And I hope it's nothing serious that affects the opportunity to play in front of NBA scouts very soon.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong, I wasn't second-guessing his decision by any means. It was just a straight-up question because going in, and I think we kind of found out pretty quickly that they were full speed ahead. It was going to be all Bonzi and the whole team no matter what happened. But just listening to some of Mike Bray's comments, even a couple weeks before they got Bonzi back, I mean, we didn't know if they were going to get him back, if they got him back, what the extent of it was going to be. And then there was some question if they make the NCAA tournament, maybe he keeps playing depending on how he feels. But if it's the NIT, I mean, do you risk the whole thing? And unfortunately, he went out there, and hopefully it's minor, because even after the Hampton game, I asked him, how do you feel now? Because he's sitting there, he's got ice packs on his knees, which you expect they all have that after the games most of the time because they're running up and down and the whole thing. But again, he'd only been back for a couple of weeks. Asked him how he felt. He's like, hey, just titanium screw, nothing. I haven't felt anything. And so it's just really unfortunate that in this time that he had been back, he hadn't even felt a twinge, it sounded like. And then all of a sudden he comes down a little bit awkwardly in a game, and it's a completely different story. But looking at, I saw, I think, a tweet from Tom Noy earlier today that Bonzi had the x-ray and it was inconclusive. So there's not even anything that's come back. So maybe it was just a little bit of overuse and he just needs to rest it. I mean, hopefully that's all it is, because inconclusive means they didn't see anything worth seeing, it sounds like.
Even though I can see both sides, I would have been fine with whatever decision Bonzi made. I do appreciate the fact he loves college basketball, he loves Notre Dame, and he loves his teammates, and he wanted to play. And I do appreciate that in an era where we have the one-and-dones in college basketball. The fact that he stayed 4 years and wanted to be a part of this, even in the NIT, that's a pretty strong young man.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, Fournette and the running back from Stanford last
McCaffrey.
Year. Kim McCaffrey, thanks. He was slipping my mind there for a second. I mean, they both sat out, and there was a little bit of backlash, but they both ended up being first-round picks. And you kind of hear, like with this Metu guy, and you just some of the comments from a lot of the different analysts. Does he really love the game? Does it really drive him? Does he really want to play basketball? And you start to hear a lot of that different stuff now, like with the NFL draft coming up, you hear it about different guys. I think Bonzi answered that question without a shadow of a doubt. He just loves playing basketball, and specifically he loved playing with the guys he was playing with, and he wanted to play with them as long as he could.
And football's a different animal than basketball in terms of injuries, too, especially a running back.
Yeah.
Very easy to get dinged up.
Yep.
All right. It is 20 minutes in front of the top of the hour. Sean and Darren with you. Let's do rapid fire after this on 96.1 WSBT. Dan Patrick, tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. following Golic and Wingo, 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. This is Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat, presented by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some buds. He's Sean Sires. I'm Darren Pritchett, and this is Rapid Fire.
Let's start with Syracuse. Scale of 1 to 10, how much does the Orange beating Michigan State mean the selection committee got it right when they put Syracuse in the tournament?
So 1 means it doesn't change anything, and 10 means it changes everything.
Right. Basically, 10 is total validation.
Gotcha.
1 is the least validation, I guess.
Can I say 0?
Sure.
Because just because you won 3 games doesn't mean you should have been the 68th team in the tournament. That doesn't validate anything. It goes by resumes and what you accomplished during the regular season. So I think you can make an argument for a lot of teams. If they would have got in, they could have won a couple of games
exactly
in the tournament. So it changes nothing for me. I think Syracuse was without a doubt the most questionable decision made by the committee, putting one of the at-larges in. It does not change the resume one bit.
Yeah, I mean, Syracuse and Loyola Chicago, they're both 11 seeds. What if Loyola had played in the first 4 instead of Syracuse? Or what if you switched them around? The matchups play such a big part in this whole thing. And whether it's Middle Tennessee State, St. Mary's, USC, Oklahoma State, Notre Dame, you can go down the line. All these teams that were sitting there on the bubble, I mean, who's to say they wouldn't have made a run as well? So I'm a little bit higher. I said a 2, but I completely agree. It's not a validation. I mean, Syracuse was a 10 seed a couple of years ago, and they ran all the way to the Final 4. I mean, look at, like, UMBC. Just to get in, they had to knock off Vermont to get in. So while they weren't a bubble and put in, it's still there's just so many factors out there when it comes to this stuff.
How about UMBC? A few weeks ago, Albany 84, UMBC 39. That was a regular season game.
Wow.
UMBC lost to Albany 84-39.
That's crazy.
At home. And here they are beating Virginia. And it should be pointed out, Syracuse's best win this year by far was a home win over Clemson. Loyola went down to Gainesville and beat Florida.
Beat Florida.
So you could argue Loyola has a better victory.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now leaving the social impact out of the equation on this next question. Okay, we're going to go to UMBC here. Going strictly on sports merit, the bigger upset, UMBC over Virginia or the U.S. hockey team 1980 against the Soviet Union?
Still 1980 for me. It was college kids beating a group of veteran Russian players, and Russia clobbered them 2 weeks before that particular rematch in the gold medal round. I mean, it wasn't even close. It was men against boys. These are same age players going toe to toe.
It's true.
It was basically 18, 19, 20-year-olds on that 1980 team playing 25, 30, 35-year-olds. So to me, it still comes down to the miracle on ice is a greater upset than this, because this is an era where there is so much parity in college basketball. This was going to happen at some point. We were all expecting it, even though maybe we were surprised it was UMBC beating Virginia, who lost 2 times all year. I just think in this era of parity, it's hard to say that is a greater upset than a bunch of college kids losing to professionals in the Olympics.
My initial gut instinct is the same answer as yours.
Don't do it.
Okay, but
do it.
But if we make this a math problem, because we all love analytics, right? If we make this simple math, and it's actually easier than you think. Since the tournament expanded to 64, 33 years ago, okay, so you've got 33 years first, right? Number one seeds had gone up, what, 132-0 against 16 seeds in the tournament. Okay, so that's a span of 33 years. So if you just look at, if you start at 33 years, 20 years before the Miracle on Ice, the U.S. beat the Russians as well at Squaw Valley. So they had already done it. And I realize what you're saying about the college students and how great the Russian team was and all that. But, I mean,
I don't think the 60 Russian team was at the level of the 80 team.
You're right. But again, at least you had some precedent. Yes, the U.S. had done it before. So you can go back 33 years, it was 132-0. Whereas you go back 20 years and the U.S. had done it. Again, different team and the whole thing. But kind of like I just referenced a second ago, just to get into the tournament, UMBC had an 8% chance to beat Vermont in the America East Championship game. Vermont had beaten them 20 straight times. So just to get there, they had an 8% chance to win, and it took a 3-second or a 3-point shot with like a half second left for them to do it. So they do that, and Virginia wasn't just the number one seed. We talk about parity and the whole thing. They're the number one overall seed in this tournament. Nobody saw it coming. I mean, most people thought that it was going to be Penn against Kansas if there was a shot, but it didn't quite turn out that way. But that, of the 132 previous 16 versus 1 games, only 16 were even decided by single digits, 12%. So when you add it all up, I'm at least, they're on the same line. And that's one of the first things that I thought of. My son sent me a text. Where do you put this as far as, I mean, it's at least in the same sentence, if it's not greater than, but because of the long history, we really, I don't know if we ever, any of us truly thought that a 16 was ever going to beat a 1. Maybe we thought that they would get closer, but I don't know that we ever thought it was going to be done. So it's at least on the same line as the Miracle on Ice, I think.
I will hurt my argument by saying this. I looked it up. The average age of the USA team was 22 years old. The Russians, the average age was 26, but they had 5 30-year-olds on their team. So yeah. I will slightly hurt my argument by bringing up the actual facts.
Yeah. And I guess you could say, I don't know what all the stars are, the recruiting and ratings and all that for Virginia, but I guarantee you that their stars add up to more than UMBC's stars. That's for sure. So, but I mean, we still talk about the Miracle on Ice 38 years later, and as long as it takes for another 16 seed to pull this off, we're going to be talking about UMBC now every year when we look at our brackets. We're going to look at 16-1 a little bit differently now as a result over the next few years. Okay, there were some notable tournament-related F-bombs dropped this weekend. The first was when
True TV,
a Knoxville, Tennessee radio personality tweeted, F Sister Jean. And of course, he didn't just use F, he actually spelled it out after Loyola Chicago knocked off Tennessee.
She's 98 years old.
I know, and she's a nun.
Come on.
The others were TNT cameras caught Nevada head coach Eric Musselman dropping several F-bombs in the locker room celebrating his team's victory. So let's start with the bozo from Tennessee. He says, F Sister Jean, everyone. And again, he didn't just say F, he spelled it out. So he says it was meant as a joke. So
stop.
This guy is a member of the media, too. He's not just a run-of-the-mill, just a fan out there, even though he, looking at his Twitter page, he looks like he's a fan cloaked as media. But, I mean, do you find this tweet even remotely funny?
Zero. Absolutely not.
Yeah.
Disrespectful. Can't happen.
And Greg Haugh, did you read the Greg Haugh story?
David Hall?
David Haugh, I'm sorry.
I heard
David
he Haugh called the guy and got and wrote a story about it, but I have not read it yet.
Yeah. So David Haugh from the Chicago Tribune calls the guy, and I'm not going to say his name to get him any more notoriety out of this thing, but here's what he had to say. Quote, "My comments about Sister Jean were meant to be simply as a joke, nothing more, nothing less. It was meant to be comedic. Cheap maybe, but comedic. A lot of people got a kick out of it, and a lot of people were offended by it. You think? I don't regret the joke. No, I don't, because of the fact it was a joke.
Hmm.
I'm going to go. I'm wondering when are we as a society going to learn how to take a joke again? Why are we so soft on the internet, yet in real life, people are joking around about things they wouldn't post online? Pardon my language, but can we stop bull-essing ourselves for once and have a laugh?
Wait.
So there you go.
If you are having a conversation with a person face-to-face or even probably on the phone, if you're in person, the facial reaction, nonverbal communication, even on the phone, your tone, you can tell if someone is joking.
Right.
How can I tell you're joking on Twitter?
You can't. How many times do you see someone say, oh, I was being sarcastic? Well, you can't read sarcasm on Twitter. And when you say, F Sister Jean, everyone, that doesn't come off as funny. When you're the only one who thinks it's funny, it's not very funny. And nobody else, with the exception of Tennessee fans, seems to think that it's funny. When you consider the whole Greg Schiano thing, I mean, Tennessee fans seem to sort of have this bubble around themselves that they can't break out of. Because what he says is he's sitting in a room watching the game with Tennessee fans. They're showing Sister Jean all the time. They got sick of it, and he decided to tweet that. I mean, there are a lot of things that showed up on TV. It's just way too much, completely offensive.
The common sense of Tennessee was shown when they hired one of the biggest cheaters of all time, Bruce Pearl, who got them in trouble.
Yeah. I mean, there are plenty of things that everyone, maybe you say it in the privacy of your own living room, you have a private conversation, whatever, but it crosses a line. I don't think anyone found it funny but him and his friends.
Sister Jean will be enjoying her team play later on this week.
That's
Tennessee
right.
fans, they can watch spring football, and their women's basketball team got upset too.
That's right.
Lady Vols, they gone.
How much time do we have here, Darren?
We've got about a minute.
I don't think. Well, let's do the Musselman thing real quick. Greg Gumbel apologized for his colorful language. Do you have a bigger problem with Musselman saying what he said? Basically, he was like, this effing game or, you know, whatever. Or do you have a problem with the fact that TNT aired it on live TV?
In the locker room, they are allowed to say what they want. Cameras are invading on their privacy.
Right.
So that's what CBS/True TV/TBS/TNT get for going live, something like that.
Well, and that's what I don't get is what happened to the 7-second delay? Even we have a 7-second delay here at the station. I thought that especially after the Janet Jackson thing, it was pretty commonplace in live sporting events and the whole deal. So I'm shocked that they would send a camera in there and not think that there's no chance of getting any spicy language or anything when you're talking about a team celebrating. Because I agree with what you're saying. I mean, I just think that if you're going to do that, that's why they have a cooling off period. If you're going to do that, send a camera, microphones into the locker room. A 7-second delay seems pretty standard. I'm shocked that that happened.
Not sure what happened in the control room. Maybe they were watching Sister Jean's press conference. First, she said, when she was asked about being a national star, she goes, international star.
That's right.
Nice.
That's right. I'm more tired of them showing the crying kids. Hopefully, they're done showing the crying kids on TV after these first couple rounds.
That has been debated. It does tell the story.
Yeah.
But can you tell the story in a different way?
And when you cut back to that same kid 4 and 5 times, that's a little bit much.
Agreed. Rapid Fire, 96.1 WSBT. Sports Beat brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. Once again, congratulations, South Bend Riley. Unbelievable boys basketball season.
Yep.
26-1, lost to Carmel at semi-state, 63-43. They shot below 20% from the field, 34 points below their season average.
They just really, based on some of the times I saw them play this year, they just really look like maybe the moment got a little bit big. They got out of their game, weren't sharing the ball the way they did throughout the season.
Great run by the Wildcats.
Yep.
Top of the hour, this is WSBT South Bend.